listening to the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast with your host, Andy Plimer. Bringing you up-to-date coaching concepts from the world of rugby. Sharing ideas to make the game better.
Welcome to episode 105 of the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. I'm your host, Andy Plimer, and joining me today is Alana Thomas. Alana is the head coach of the Melbourne Rebels Super Rugby women's team and played for the Wallaroos over a four-year period before moving into coaching. In 2017, Alana won Rugby AU's Community Coach of the Year Award on the back of winning the Victorian Premiership with the mighty Melbourne Unicorns. And it's a pleasure to have her on the show. So welcome, Alana.
Nice to meet you, Andy. And yeah, good to be on.
Yeah, great. The Unicorns, tell me about them. What a great name for a rugby club.
Yeah, it's just one of the local grassroots club here in Melbourne. And the Melbourne Unicorns. So everyone gets their sort of their unicorn signs up when they win games. But no, it was just a really good club, great history in Melbourne in the sort of the men's side of the game. And the women's team sort of, I think, started in about 2013, 14 or around then. And right. They've just been a mainstay in the competition since.
Well, if ever I move to Melbourne with my kids, I'll tell you now, my 11-year-old and 8-year-old daughters will be all in to join the Unicorns.
It's a way of getting kids to come play.
Yeah, 100%. Great strategy. All right, cool. What about you as a player? What was your backstory there? You were talking a bit before that you're from Glen Innes originally. That's Sapphire Country. Was that where you started playing rugby, and how did it progress from there?
Well, I was actually a late starter, so didn't play rugby as a kid. I actually played rugby league as a kid up until the usual story you hear from women's rugby or women's players, that they finished at 12 and then took up all other sports, basketball. And then it wasn't until uni, after a gap year, came to uni in Orange and was trialing out for netball and hated wearing the skirt. And a couple of girls saw me passing footy passes on the netball court and asked if I wanted to go to rugby training. And I was like, never played rugby union, played a lot of touch footy and league, and went, yeah, I'll come down. And literally went down in Orange in central New South Wales, pair of joggers, ran around, fell in love with it. And that was 2001. And then I just, started from there, just absolutely loved playing, loved the club there, loved all the players that we had. And, by 2003, I was in the New South Wales countryside. In 2006, I'm in Edmonton, Canada, playing in a Rugby World Cup, and nice. Had some of the best experiences in life so far. And got some great friends all around the world, and that's sort of my playing journey. I sort of just fell into it in uni by accident, really.
Yeah, no, it's actually, apart from the representing Australia part, it's a similar story to mine. That I started playing league and then switch over and fell in love with just like the openness of the game and the flow and the continuity. That was a big one. And I think when you look at Australian women's rugby, especially, I think that's a pathway of from non rugby playing sports into rugby that's got to be explored and has probably proven successful too, especially at the sevens level.
Yeah, definitely. I think just the cross codes and other athletes coming across to rugby from other sports and being able to transition. And I think sevens has done it, the best, and they got a gold medal out of it in an Olympics with all the crossover athletes from touch football and other sports. So it's definitely an area that we need to explore and grow, and particularly with all the other sort of football codes coming around, AFLW, obviously down here in Melbourne, that's Aussie rules football. There is more and more athletes and female athletes playing contact sport, whether it be league, union or AFL now.
Yeah, great point. Cool. And what about coaching? When was the first time you got involved in that, and how'd that come about?
So my first ever coaching role was while I was still playing, and it was the mighty Forbes Under 9 Platypie, my nephew's team.
Yes.
Helping out my brother-in-law and just like kids playing Waller rugby, just their introduction to it. And I just was, it was so good because you could go on the field with the kids. And
yeah,
I think we went through undefeated, which it wasn't about as under nines. It was about having fun. But by the
time most coaches.
Yeah. Well, for the parents, when we had our last tournament, they were getting beaten by a Sydney side. And it was quite funny. The parents were like, we've got to win. We can't let these Sydney siders beat us. But then I said, it's about the fun for the kids. That was my first ever toe into the water of coaching my nephews. And it probably sums up why I got into coaching when I finished playing. So I finished playing after having a pretty severe concussion and sort of had a few side effects from that for about 6 to 8 months. And then sort of decided, hey, this is not right. And needed to look after my sort of my head. So I sort of finished playing up, but I still wanted to stay involved because like rugby, I'm sure all your listeners that are all rugby fans, that it gets into your blood. It becomes a part of your DNA. And I didn't want to sort of just walk away from the sport. It had given me so much as a player and life experiences and some of the best memories. And I wanted to stay involved. So I ended up sort of putting my hand up and helping out at the local club, which was the Unicorns, and doing a bit of coaching. And then just was helping out there, and then got an opportunity to do some sevens coaching, and then sort of went, okay, I might go get my coaching course and a foundation, and started my coaching certificates. And I think it was in 2015, I was an assistant coach at the state team for Victoria and got to go on a Rugby Australia coach development program for female coaches, and ended up back in the Wallaroos camp. And I sort of got back into that and was like, wow, I want to be here just like I was a player. The fire that I had in my belly as a player was reignited. So I sort of, that's how I got into coaching. And then from sort of 2015, I really sort of put my head down and made it a goal to try and be the best I could be at coaching.
Yeah. And what were some of those things? Like you've got, it kind of, it seems like a pretty linear pathway there, and that often sometimes people will hit a brick wall or they'll get lucky or something will happen along the lines there. What on that path to getting from there to the Super W role, what do you think were some of the things you did that helped you in your own development as a coach?
I had some really good people around me. Nick Henderson at the time was he just finished playing for the Rebels and had transitioned into Coach Ed when I started to transition into coaching. And he was a really big supporter and helped me sort of through my coaching courses and giving me opportunities, whether it was with their Emerging Players Academy, the Sevens teams and things like that. So I had him there as sort of, I suppose, a mentor, sort of guiding me along the way and being a really big supporter. And then into the sort of state, Victorian state teams, where we went to the old national tournament over a week and had some senior coaches that had been around here in Victoria for a while, helped me sort of learn my trade and taught me sort of how to go about things. And then for me, I then sort of got that drive myself when that fire was lit in my belly, that I sort of started to reach out to other coaches, look at other sports, do coach development, go looking for webinars and podcasts and things like that to sort of listen to other coaches and follow and sort of learn from them. So for me, it was just always a constant drive to learn and develop and grow. And then when Super W came around, I'd been coaching the state team for a couple of years, and applied for it and got the role, and that sort of started the journey. And again, just continuing to chase development opportunities and say yes to a lot of things, even when time doesn't really permit.
Yeah.
Say yes. Been there. And yeah.
Continue to do it.
Yeah. So, and then I was really fortunate to get an opportunity with the AIS with a high performance coach course, the Australian Youth Sport, and got to work with 17 other female coaches from around Australia in a variety of sports. And then World Rugby had a female high performance academy for women's coaches, and I got to go to Stellenbosch in that. So chasing opportunities and development through a variety of rugby pathways, but also through a variety of other sports as well.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Nick Henderson's role there, but you also mentioned that you were in some all-female groups. How important is that all-female group for a female coach in what could be seen as a bit of an old boys kind of male-dominated arena. How important was that for your own development?
Yeah, that was really important because it's sort of sometimes you feel like you're alone. If you, there's not hundreds of female coaches so in rugby, so it was good in Australia. So it was to be in the AIS course with all those other coaches from a variety of sports, you sort of heard and shared your stories and your journeys were probably had very similar sort of challenges and barriers that you had to sort of work through. So it was really good to share those stories. And even to this day, so what is it, nearly 3 years ago since we were on the course, we're all still connected through our little WhatsApp group and sort of follow everyone and their successes and their journeys. So that's been massively important. I think that's something that if I was to give any advice to any coach would be to make sure you have good people and good connections and networks around you. And also not just inside your sport, because you can learn so much about programming and management, more management of players and environments from other coaches, because the technical and tactical is unique, but we've got to manage people and how we get the best out of athletes and the like. So I think it's been really massively important in my journey.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great point. What about your own coaching philosophy? How, if someone was to ask you what that is, how would you answer that question?
Yeah, it's always, I always sort of think of this one and I sort of look at it, I'm very like player centric is my philosophy and creating the environment for players that they feel like they can belong and then therefore will allow them to perform. So mine's more just around the players and creating that environment so that they feel safe to express themselves, try things. But it's not just about rugby, it's about off field as well. And that's something that is massively important, particularly in women's sport, is because there is so much going on in their lives. They're not professional. So the opportunity for them to be able to come into an environment, express themselves, but also supporting them so that they feel like they belong and, you know, helping them with, you know, whether it's work, study, you know, kids, whatever it is away from rugby, that we're able to support them. So my philosophy is really player-centric and creating an environment that they sort of feel safe in.
Yeah, and on the practice pitch, how would that look? You mentioned a few things off the field there, but if someone was to come and watch a practice session, how would they see some player-centered style coaching from you?
Well, the thing for me is really having a bit of fun. So we always start the sort of session off with some core skill and then some vibe games. So again, just having some fun with the players. You know, someone could have had an hour and a half trip in traffic, so we try and make it a bit of fun when they get there and relax. And always, you know, referring and asking them questions. So asking questions of the players and pulling that information out of them and giving them a voice in training rather than sort of the old, you know, you go and do this and don't say anything. So I sort of try to coach with the questioning. What are they feeling? What are they seeing? How can we improve? You know, if we did something well, why did we do it well? And trying to get them to sort of own it a lot is probably one of the things that you would see. And then on game day, it's again making sure that everything is there for the players. Like I don't do much on game day other than the pre-game chat and warm up. I really leave it to our leaders. And other things that I've done, and this year we've done a little bit differently, is have a bigger leadership group and have people who are looking after our social and then our standards and our game, and having the players own and drive the environment so that it is theirs. Because at the end of the day, they've got to go out and play. So giving them the most support we can. So bit different this year, and it's been going really, really well so far.
Awesome. Great. And you know, for me, and probably for a lot of fans of rugby and especially women's rugby as well, like super rugby for Super W is, you know, it's long overdue addition to Aussie professional rugby landscape, or the rugby landscape in general. What's a bit of a backstory of its inception? Who were some of the key shakers and movers, and how to get to where it is now in year two?
So I think it was off the back of I probably think the 2000 and 17 World Cup that after I think Ireland, they sort of realized that we needed to go away from the week-long nationals where you literally would play every 2 to 3 days, and it wasn't the best preparation for an
15s rugby is not a tournament sport.
Yes. So
for anyone who's played a 15s tournament, you know that as soon as you leave that tournament.
Exactly. And I think that was sort of, and then obviously there was obviously Build Corp were a major sponsor of the women's program, and they invested, I think, a lot of money into setting it up so that the players could have a really good competition that replicated week in, week out, high performance elite environment. And to set that up and to ensure that we were giving those players the best prep moving into international test matches against, you know, New Zealand, who are the world number one team and have won so many World Cups. So that was, I think, the backstory and the inception to ensure that we were preparing them the best. And you know, it's been now going since, I think 2018 was the first year, and it was sort of just a feel and see how it's going. And then what you saw off the back of that was come the test matches against the Kiwis in Australia. After the first test match, they, even the New Zealand team, I think, noticed. They actually said, you know, you've lifted your game, your athletes are stronger and fitter and faster than they've been. So we could see an immediate impact. And then it's sort of been rolling on, and you know, 2019, 2020, we started to see and get some momentum and get some depth across Australia in women's rugby, which was fantastic. And then obviously our uncle COVID hit and sort of stemmed a bit of that. But I think it's, as I said, long overdue. It's definitely something, you know, that other codes had sort of got to. You know, we've got cricket over here, WBBL going great guns. We've got AFLW and then NRLW, which is National Rugby League for women. So it's sort of just exploded in the last sort of 3 or 4 years, women's sport, and rugby got in and made sure they got their comp set up. And I think we'll see the fruits of it come this World Cup.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you talk a little bit about, you mentioned it a bit there, just the growth in, like, the growth in women's rugby far exceeds the growth in men's rugby. And especially in an environment like Australia, where you do have so much competition, a lot, like here in Canada, rugby is the only contact sport that women can play in the summer. So it's really important that this momentum continues. Otherwise, you'll have a similar picture with the men's game, where, you know, we play second and third fiddle to Aussie rules and rugby league. And I think that's a really important thing to consider, that we need to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, we had some, you know, I think we are across the world, but in Australia, obviously the women's side of rugby union is the growth corridor or the growth area for our game. And, you know, it's expanding into areas and into countries that aren't not traditional rugby countries. Like, I know in Asia, you know, the women's game's exploding over there, and it's coming through the sevens and off the Olympics, but it's the major area of growth for world rugby is the women's space. So having more visibility of it is a very important piece. And, you know, we've seen across this journey for 4 years, we capped cap number 88 on the weekend in the Rebels team. So we've had 88 players come through, and growing the grassroots is off the back of that is the visibility of playing games and seeing on TV and getting opportunities. So hopefully that then transcends into the growth of the junior girls competitions, and the women's competition starts to grow off the back of that.
And did I see that it's free to air this season?
Yeah, they're putting it on free to air on Saturday for some of their games. Yeah, it's massive win for rugby in Australia.
Oh, that's great. That's a great continuation, a great continued step forward. And, you know, just backtracking a little bit, you mentioned a little bit about how the head coaching role came along. How has that process been since you've been the head coach? What's the big kind of learnings and big rocks that you've kind of explored over those 4 years you've been involved with the team?
A lot of learning.
A lot.
There's a lot of learning, but I think the biggest thing is don't be afraid to try things, like, and don't try and be someone that you're not. I think in the first sort of couple of years, or the first year particularly, I sort of was trying to be someone, not me, I wasn't, you know, sort of coaching how I would sort of see the game, and I was trying to go, I should be doing this. I'm a head coach and I should be doing this, and this is what other head coaches done. And I probably got caught up looking outside too much and not looking internally and following my gut as a lot. And so that was probably the big learning. And then ensuring that I surrounded in the staff with good people and having good experts in areas. You know, I'm a former fly half, so I have no real clue about forwards and set piece and telling a front rower and a hooker how to scrum. So
some of them don't either, so that's fine too.
Well, I think that's exactly right. If you're going to put your head in there, then you don't want to know what you're getting into. But no, it's more about surrounding yourself with good people and not being afraid not to know everything. That's probably the other big learning, that as a head coach, you don't need to know everything, and to be able to say, hey, yeah, I'm not sure, but I've got, you know, here's our assistant coach. They've, you know, let's go talk to them. Or, okay, if I don't know, I'm going to go find out. So it helped me with my learning as well. So that was probably the two big things that I learned early on. And then from that, I got a lot of confidence when I started to back myself and try things. And, you know, they may not have always worked, but I was able to have the confidence to make those decisions. And that was something that then coming into 2020, I really backed myself and stuck with my gut on a lot of things, and we started to see some success. So that's probably the big thing, is being able to trust your gut, go and ask for help and talk to people. That was around the time I was doing my coaching stuff with AIS, and being able to just tap in and have conversations with people and have conversations with other coaches and just bounce ideas and things off. Because I think as a head coach, if you sort of ask people, they sort of sometimes give you the answer they think you want to hear, but actually having people that were outside of the team and the sport, you were able to have that person that you could sort of bounce ideas. And I had some AFL coaches and some rugby league coaches, and being able just to sit down and talk to them was massive. So as a head coach, I think you need to have people that are there to support you as well, whether it's a mentor or whether it's just people that you can go to bounce ideas and spitball ideas around. I think is really important, because you don't normally have that support around you as a head coach. You're supporting the rest of the crew.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, I think that you raise a really good point there about being authentic. I think that's so important, and I think it's a trap that a lot of coaches have fallen into, is thinking they have to be one way, then they don't. I know I definitely fell into that trap when I was doing a little bit of age grade Canada stuff over here. I felt I had to be a different coach than what I actually am. And it's good to reflect on that and realize that. And the important part of that is too, is the players pick up on it. They know that something's just a little off here.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that was the thing. And then when I was able to just go, no, just be you. The players saw it, and, you know, they were like, because a lot of the players I'd probably played with when they were playing club footy coming through, the younger ones, and they were like, yeah, this is you. Like, you seem more relaxed. You're laughing. I sort of lost that fun element to rugby. I'd forgotten why I got into rugby was the fun and the people and the relationships. So, being able to do that was a massive relief, and also, the quality I was giving to the players was better too.
Yeah. The first half of my coaching time, I was just way too serious. And now I'm like the complete opposite. I like being the assistant coach, so I don't have to be that serious voice and that serious role. I'll still do it occasionally when it's required. But I think we can all fall into that trap where we just take the whole thing a bit too seriously. And we can drift away from what the values are for what people are there for. Because whether you're under nine in Glen Innes or you're in the Super Rugby women's team for the Rebels, you're still doing it because you love it and that it's a fun sport to play.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing I love as a coach, when you see a player enjoying themselves, or again, if a player, you've been working on the player, whether it be on tackle tech or being able to make decisions in tackle or in attack, and you see them do it on the field, and when they come off the field and just the pure smile on their face,
you see that,
and it's just like, I did. And just to see the joy that they get, it's like, that's the moment. Forget about wins and losses. To see a player come off with a smile and go, I've done something I had been working on, that's probably why I do it.
Hi, coaches. Just a quick update on the Evolve Rugby online coaching course that I'm currently producing based on the content from 100+ awesome guests of the podcast. I've recently wrapped up a beta trial of the first 5 chapters with a group of coaches from the UBC Men's Rugby program out in Vancouver, British Columbia. They went through all of the video content, worksheets, the course journal, and have provided me with some amazing insight. Top quality coaches giving me excellent feedback on the course material is exactly what I need to make Evolve Rugby as impactful as possible. So, a huge thanks to Curry and all of his coaches out there at UBC for their time. More updates on Evolve Rugby to come in future weeks, but for now, kick back and enjoy this episode. Cheers.
You know, the season's just kicking off over there. What about the preseason for the group? What's that been like? What's been the focus over the preseason? And, you know, what are some of the goals that have been set by the playing group and yourself?
So, yeah, so preseason, we've sort of started back in November last year, and as we've had sort of 4 years where we've sort of been on the improve and being real competitive last year. And we sat down and talked about, we've now done all of our development. We're not going to be satisfied with just everyone saying, oh, yeah, geez, the Rebels have improved and they're getting better. We've talked a lot about converting opportunities. We've grown, we've developed our game plan, our skills, and we created a lot of opportunities last season, but we just didn't know how to convert them. So a lot's been talked about converting opportunities. We've done a lot of work on our skill work. We brought in a coach that was doing a lot of skill work with our backs and our forwards, and we're starting to see that reward coming through in terms of our ball handling and the way we're playing. We've been able to evolve our game. So, again, it comes back to creating opportunities, converting them, and just being really smart and clinical in how we go about things, and then really aggressive in our attack and our game plan. So not just aggressive in defense, but being aggressive in how we want to play the game and the style of game we want to play. So it's been a lot of focus on that during our preseason and preparing us for the style of game we want to play. And we've sort of seen that in the first round in patches, but we came up against a very good side in the Fijiana Jura. So, but we're really confident in what we've done in the preseason. That's laid some really good foundations going into the competition. And, you know, again, people have been sort of watching and seeing the change in the team and the way we go about it. But it's been a real big skill focus. Like, you've got to be able to do the basics for me, catch, pass, tackle, to then be able to play an expansive, aggressive game plan. So we've invested a lot into that, and then a lot of game sort of style of play to, again, create opportunities in training and pitches in training for the players to be able to make decisions and convert those opportunities that they've created. So that's been a really big focus for the first sort of 3 months.
Cool. Awesome. And you mentioned Fijiana there, and I think that another thing that is long overdue is Australian rugby's support and inclusion of Pacific Island and Fijian teams. And we're seeing that now. It should have happened years ago, but I think it's great. We saw it in the NRC when that was still going, and we're seeing it now with Super W and the Super Rugby team. What's the competition structure like that you have? How many games will the team play, and how long will the season go for?
So we play 5 games. So there's 6 teams. So we've got the Queensland Reds, we've got the New South Wales Waratahs, ACT Brumbies, Melbourne Rebels, Western Force, and then we've brought in the Fijiana team this year. So there's 6 teams. We play each other once, and we either go home and away. So five games, and then the teams that finished second and third play each other to play the final against the team that topped the table after the home and away series. So that's sort of the format at the moment. So potentially seven matches, or six to seven matches across the season. And this year it's played, a lot of our games are played now as double headers with the men's Super Rugby, trying to match up the home teams, so you can have double headers at the stadiums. So that's the format currently, and then so that'll be sort of all wrapped up after around Easter, over here. So it's a good start getting to travel week in, week out. So again, it's, you've got time to work on things. We've got squads of about 30 that we get to have across the season, because obviously injuries and the like happen. So squads of 30, so each team has 30 players.
Yeah, and we mentioned off air that you have the Brumbies coming up on Friday night with a short turnaround. As a coach, how do you manage a short turnaround when you miss out on a day of prep, day of recovery? What's your strategy there?
Yeah, so really, really key for the short turnaround is the sort of athletic performance guys, in terms of our recovery post game, immediately after the game. That, you know, we played Saturday, so Sunday recovery, ensuring that the players are in their sort of ice baths, or in, you know, other forms of recovery that they may have accessible. Then it's just the planning of the week and being really, really clear on what we want to do. So obviously last night we had a review review and gym. So again, any injury assessments, treatments. We move into a modified session on a Tuesday. So basically that's our session of just working through our game plan. What do we need to improve on? How do we want to play for the weekend? Then we've got massages on Wednesday. So again, just best a refresh. Yeah. That the girls, when we said, oh, we're going to have to come in on Wednesday, and they're like, looked, and then we said, but you're getting massages. Like, yep, no worries. We're coming in.
Start the car.
Yeah. So massage. So yeah, getting them a massage midweek. And then we just have a captain's run, which is a really, really short 45-minute session on Thursday, and we play Friday night. So it's being really clear on what we want to get out of it, what we need to work on, and making sure that we just focus on that rather than trying to do too much and overload.
Yeah, definitely. So minimal contact, minimal high intensity sprints or anything like that, more just fine tuning and recovery.
Yeah, so like the session will be, minimum, there'll probably be one small block, like less than 5 minutes, 6 minutes of contact, full contact, okay. And the rest of it is really modified, closed contact, and then, you know, really just, again, I sort of, in that sort of course, it's a short week, we try to just get that confidence and that skill execution right up, and make sure that that's where we're at. So we call it like a prepare to win session. There's no conditioning or running. They'll be doing a 6 minute block of a multi-phase game, which is gives us which we try to do as much of that rather than just straight line running,
because
one of the days of straight line running, it's create games and where you get skill, decision making, but you're getting that athletic performance sort of conditioning in that. So we'll do a 6 minute block of that. Just again to get the flush out of the legs. Get the we will try and get some high speed running meters, but it's only going to be for a very short period.
Just to
ensure we don't sort of go too easy and then potentially pick up soft tissues.
For sure. Yeah, you still want a little bit of high intensity but low volume.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. Definitely. All right. Well, you know, you touched on a few things there that I think will come out in this question, but moving forward, how would you like to see the Super W format grow and expand over the next, 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, so I'd love to see it be two rounds, so home and away, so you play each other.
That was my first thought.
So, yeah, because I think, you know, particularly for us in the past, you know, by the time we get to the last round, we're starting to really get our cohesion and our game plan and our understanding of where we want to be and how we want to play. And some of the games we want to go back and have that opportunity to play the opposition again. So I think that's a logical step, is that home and away. And then being able to see the super franchises have the programs year round, because sort of we finish Super W, they go back to grassroots, back to their clubs, and they're training through that. Our pony players or players of national interest in the Wallaroos will be training and still doing their skills and their gym. But for me, it'd be like to have it as a year-round program so that you get finish the season, you can do your full review, you're able to get your players and really focus through club rugby on whether they need focus on strength. So if we're trying to get girls a little bit stronger or more powerful or work on their you know, their physical prep in terms of, you know, wingers being able to do sprinting and biomechanics on their running techs and things like that. I'd love to see that facilitated so you can actually grow each player and strengthen the players in terms of their overall fitness, skills and the like, and also nutrition and education-wise away from the field. So I just think we don't get enough time to invest in that, because I think that's the whole – again, I work at the Victorian Institute of Sport as my day job, and all the athletic support services around it, like sports psych, their performance lifestyle and wellbeing space, how we can help them develop that, the nutrition space, and then obviously the strength and conditioning is a major part of creating the whole athlete. So I think that's probably where I'd like to see Super W move to. And then they're in that cycle for 12 months and they're developing and growing. And I just think that then the programs will grow, the competition will grow, the games will be really, you know, the games will go to a different level. And again, you can sort of do that and bring in your underage girls as well. And that's probably the next logical step is having, and I think they're doing a bit of a pilot with Waratahs, a few of the team, bigger states, to have under 18 girls come in.
Right.
Again, then you've got your pathway through to Super W. So it's not just the main group. You can grow down into your depth, down to underage players.
Yeah, no, that's important. And I think you also have to double down on the investment there as well. You can't just talk about a daily training environment. It has to be funded. And, you know, that would be a really important step moving forward.
Yeah. I think like this year, the Rebels have decided to pay their players, pay our players during the comp.
Fantastic.
So, and it's sort of forced the hands and as well that, you know, they've sort of taken the plunge and it's probably sort of forced a few others to think about it. And, you know, the girls are going to be remunerated and paid, you know, in terms of each game, they'll get a payment and then there's a payment for expenses on top of that. So they will be able to come out of it if they play every game with it with some money. And then if we can continue to get that investment and grow and they become, you know, they'll become part-time athletes into hopefully professional. Again, it's, again, that investment, but getting sponsors involved and being a part of that. And that was where we started with it because people wanted to be a part of it. Sponsors said, we want to help you do this. So we're going to put money into it to make sure that these players get paid. And that's sort of the start. And then if we can get more in sponsorship, more free-to-air coverage, as we said before, it's just going to get exposure. We can then start to, we've got, and I hate saying the word product, but you've got a product and a program that you can promote and people want to invest in and want to be a part of. And then it becomes, if you can see it, you can be it. Young girls now have choice. You know, we're a competitor in a very competitive sports market.
Yeah. Well, it's trending in the right direction. So it's so encouraging. And as long as that continues, it's got huge potential. All right. Well, just changing tact a little bit. You've had a little bit of involvement with the Australia A team. Can you tell me a bit about what your role's been there and what that experience has been like?
Yeah, so I got to coach the Australia A team back a few years ago now for the Oceania tournament. I went in there as an attack coach. Mm-hmm. So basically I'd been working with the pony players down here and with the attack coach at the time doing a lot of skills, and I got the opportunity to go over and work with them for a three or four month period in the lead up to Oceanas. And again, working with players across the states, so satellite training, setting training plans up in terms of how we wanted to play the game and ensuring all the players had those skills and the clarity and the knowledge of how we wanted to play the game. And got to work with the then head coach of the Wallaroos, Dwayne Nesta. He came away and was the head coach, and I was an assistant with another coach, Moana Virtue. And we went over to Oceanas, played a couple of games over there, and we started to blood a lot of the now current Wallaroos, or the girls that are vying now for positions in that national team. So that was a really cool experience to work with them and get to sort of be with that sort of next level, next generation of Wallaroos. Again, we got together in a camp for a week, so you sort of have that real
buzz.
Yeah, influx of knowledge and excitement, and then on a plane to Fiji and into tournament, and you know, seeing some of these players that haven't either left the country, their first time, sort of realizing they're on that trajectory to a national team. Just the energy and the excitement was fantastic. And then just working with players who just have really good skill levels. And so then again, being able to, as a coach, having to challenge them and having to bring the best out of them and bring them together was probably the thing I really enjoyed the most about that experience.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that sounds awesome. And the Women's World Cup is coming up at the end of this year, late this year. What are you looking forward to there, and how do you think that's going to go for the Wallaroos in terms of some pretty competitive nations?
Yeah, I think it's sort of exciting now that it's getting closer and closer, and you know, I think the Wallaroos have just had some really good camp at the beginning of the year. We're going to have a really competitive Super W, and then I think we've got the lead up tournaments with the Pac Four. So we've got Canada coming down, USA coming down to play Australia, New Zealand. It's going to be a really, really good tournament. We just saw how good France and England are going over the tours that the New Zealanders just went over. You know, Canada and US have had a couple of test matches. I think they might have went over, US may have went over to England as well recently.
They went to Europe.
So look, I think it's going to be probably one of the more competitive World Cups. I think everyone's really invested in their women's programs to grow them, and you know, I even though it's in New Zealand probably get that home advantage, I think that there's probably two or three nations in, you know, France, England, that are coming along really well, that are going to really be competitive. And you know, we sort of look like with the pools are in sort of areas that we've got Australia, New Zealand, Canada, US in Pool B, and Pool C is France and England. I think we're going to see a really, really competitive, high quality tournament. And then you put the inception of South Africa doing great things over there. They've got Lynn Campbell from Ireland running their women's sort of heading their women's side of things, and they've invested quite heavily in their team. You know, we talked about Fijiana with the investment of coming to Australia. And I think, you know, Australia is going to be very competitive, and I think that, you know, I would hope to see them get through to the semis and start to push. I think they've definitely got the talent that we can get to that level in the World Cup. But yeah, it's hard to sort of go past England and France at the moment of what we saw. And, you know, I think you had Leslie McKenzie, Canadian, coaching Japan. Yeah. She's doing great things over there, and she's got two Japanese players in Super W. So,
oh, great. You know, awesome.
There's some really good investment going into the women's game across multiple nations that are going to be there. And yeah, I think it's going to be one of the better World Cups that we've seen
in the last couple. Yeah, no, I honestly, I think the last three World Cups, I've just been amazed and blown away by, like, just the improvement and the standard of play, and just the enjoyment to watch the game. It's way more open, way more flowing, way more continuity and, you know, more to the kind of the core kind of principles of the game of play. I've really enjoyed the last few World Cups, and I think you're right. I think this one's going to be an absolute belter, and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, no, it's going to be good. I think you said that a lot of people that watch women's rugby sort of go, oh, how good is it? And I think it is the whole cross-code sporting thing of athletes coming in is, you know, probably kicking's not natural, so there's not as much kicking as there is in the men's game. So you do just say that continuity.
Which is great.
Yeah, it is. It's fun to watch. It's fun to coach, and it's fun to play as well.
We might even have a World Cup where you don't see one caterpillar ruck for 10 seconds and a box kick that goes 5 meters. That would definitely be amazing.
What a
great movement for the sport that will be. Cool. All right. Well, on that note, we always end the show with the same final four questions. When you were a kid growing up in, was it Glen Innes or Inverell? Which was it? Glen Innes, right?
Glen Innes.
Yeah. So, right. Yeah. Okay. Inverell's nearby though, isn't it?
Yeah. It's about a 45-minute drive west.
Right. Okay. Right next door. When you were a kid growing up in Glen Innes, who were some of the players that you admired that got you into whatever sport that you were really passionate about and into then?
So for me, because I played league, I was a big Alan Langer fan, which my brothers hated that because we lived in New South Wales and he was Queensland. So he was probably one I liked watching. And then obviously Liz Ellis was another big sports person, Australian netball captain.
Yeah.
That I sort of watched as a kid.
Oh, great. Awesome. And what about now? Who are some of the players that you like watching play, whether it be Super Rugby, W or international?
Probably for me, Mel Carwa, our captain down here at Rebels, because she's just a great player, great person, but he's someone that just works so hard and leaves everything on the paddock. And tugging at my sort of fly half strings, I've been really impressed with and love watching Arabella McKenzie play from the Waratahs. She's an up-and-coming player that went on the Australia A tour and has just been growing and developing as a rugby player. So I really been love watching her play and how she goes about her game. And, you know, she can play 10, 15. So really looking forward to seeing her in the World Cup.
Nice. Awesome. And what about coaches? Who's a high profile coach that you respect and admire how they run their show?
So there's probably two, and they're probably from netball. So remember I said at the beginning I didn't like wearing the netball skirt, but I do like the sport. So Simone McInnes is a coach down here in Melbourne who coaches the Vixens, and I see her at work at the Victorian Institute of Sport a lot. And she's someone that I can pick up the phone to and talk to or pass in the corridor and share a conversation about, you know, again, that person I could go to spitball ideas or bounce ideas off. And she's been someone that, I really class as a good mentor. And then Lisa Alexander is another one, former Australian netball coach, and have met her a couple of times, and she's sort of always someone that's just has always been trying to be better going into other sports. And she was probably the one that said to me one year in my off season, you need to go out and do PD in other sports. You need to go and do that while you've got no rugby on. Build your knowledge bank, learn from them. So she's probably one that I really respect and admire for the longevity she had in the sport and the success she had.
Yeah, awesome. All right, and final question, who's someone in the grassroots that you feel is doing great work and deserves a shout out?
It's probably an old teammate of mine, Saleh Etuali, who's a big, big supporter and big driving force between women's rugby here in Victoria. Mm-hmm. She's an ex-teammate of mine, but she's always been at the grassroots with her local club, bringing whether it be youth girls sevens, youth girls, school girls, football coming through. She's always there on game day, and now she's there on game days with her little daughter, and she's ensuring that we've got that pathway for the young girls to come through. So Saleh's been a massive, massive figure here in Victorian women's rugby for a long time, and she continues to give back and help grow the game. So she's someone that needs a big shout out.
Awesome. All right, Alana, it's been awesome to have you on the pod. I've really enjoyed it. I'm a massive fan of women's rugby. I'm excited about the Women's World Cup and definitely want to try and get my hands on a few of the Super Women's games to see the progress there, and really appreciate you giving up some of your time to talk about it.
No, thanks, Andy, and it's great to talk to a fellow Aussie and, you know, an ex-Newcastle Uni boy, so thanks for your time. And
we have connections.
We do. So, yeah, thanks for your time, and thanks for the great work you do by putting your podcast out, because, as I said, listening to it over Christmas and the people you've had on, it's been great to sort of hear the stories from other people.
Oh, awesome. Really appreciate that. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Rugby Coach's Corner podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review via iTunes and keep listening for the next episode. You can also follow us via Twitter at @RugbyCoachesCNR or via the website therugbycoachescorner.com. Until next time, keep sharing ideas to make the game better.